Good meals aren't only about where you source your food or how you season it. They're also about the tools you use. And one of the most essential cooking tools that's become instrumental to our development as a species is the knife. With us now to discuss the history of knives, their variations, and of course their uses, is Josh Donald. He's the owner of San Francisco's Bernal Cutlery and the author of the book Sharp, The Definitive Guide to Knives, Knife Care, Cutting Techniques, with recipes from great chefs. I'm thrilled that he's able to join us today for our weekly Please Explain segment to break down his research into the origins of the world's knives and the best practices for using them. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you have a question about cutting techniques for different foods or which knife is best suited to your needs or how to get better at taking care of your cutlery, please give us a call. We're at 212-433-9692, or you can tweet us at WNYC Midday. So, Josh, tell us, when and where did you start your company, Bernal Cutlery?
Bernal Cutlery began in the back of my apartment on Cortland Avenue in Bernal Heights in 2005.
Wow. And when it initially began, were you more interested in sharpening knives or in selling them?
Yeah, I got started sharpening. It was a way to kind of help make ends meet. I was home with my son, who's now 14. He was a baby, and we needed to buy a couple extra bags of groceries. And I was laid off from a job, and my wife was starting to work freelance and starting to get some work. And so that's where Bernal Cutlery was born.
And who were some of your first customers?
Corey Obenauer from Blue Plate in San Francisco on Mission Street. He's still the chef at Blue Plate. Mokey's in Bernal Heights. And then people in the neighborhood.
Do they just pass by? Do they know you were there sharpening, or was it word of mouth? Or
first it was flyers that I put up, then it was word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. And you come from a completely different background. How did you start becoming so obsessed with knives?
Well, when I was young, I found a pocket knife, and that really set me off.
You found it?
Yeah, when I was six, I got my first pocket knife, kind of surreptitiously found it in an unused dresser drawer, and that started the craze for them.
Kind of snuck it in your pocket?
When I was a kid. Sorry?
You kind of snuck it in your pocket?
Yeah.
And then, so you were obsessed with knives as a kid, but you didn't pursue that until you were older. So what did you do in between?
Right. Well, I worked at a bronze foundry. I worked at a store in San Francisco called Paxton Gate for many years, where I got a lot of my retail chops, working with Sean Quigley there. And that was my focus there was on natural science. So I did stuff with insects and fossils, as well as plants.
And in your book, you go deep into the history of knives, and you write that the first cutting tools were fashioned over 3 million years ago, well before the age of the modern Homo sapien. So what were they made from?
Siliceous stones, things that you could chip and make a sharp edge with, so flint-type materials.
And how were they, do you know where they were found, the very first knives or, you know, proto-knives?
These were in, I believe, modern-day Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
So East Africa, you know,
and
the motherland.
And what about sword making and knife making? Are those related?
They are. I feel that in a certain way, the sword making history gets a little bit more play than it than the earlier culinary stuff in terms of techniques. It's a very enticing, you know, kind of sales pitch in a way. But there are a lot of traditions of smithing that were developed with sword making that have really become part of blacksmithing, and blacksmithing was really pushed through sword making and those sort of things.
And so they developed kind of together.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely, you know, modern blacksmithing is definitely, you know, in Japan or the West, is definitely drawing off of techniques that were developed during a time when swords were, you know, very important.
So we have a call from Betty in Manhattan.
Hi, Betty.
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
So what was your question?
Yes, my question was, what does your guest recommend for knife sharpeners? You know, I don't know if you could mention, you know, like brands on the air, but I would appreciate knowing what a good knife sharpener would be. I used to use a Diamond V, but they no longer make it.
Well, pull-through sharpeners can be easy in that, you know, you just drag the knife through. There can be a compromise in that, it sets the angle for you, and sometimes they take off metal irregularly from the edge. So if you're going to use a pull-through thing, use something that's going to be a little less aggressive. Ceramic rods or little ceramic rollers are some of the better ones. Oftentimes, if a knife is really dull, you're going to be having a hard time getting it back at home, honestly. Whetstones are my favorite material for sharpening. Those require a little bit of technique to know how to do it. A sharpening steel, old-fashioned sharpening steel, is a great thing to use to keep the knife sharp before it gets dull. And that's always, you know, once something gets really blunt, you're going to have some challenges getting an edge back.
If you've just
And it's nice to bring somebody that can grind it and reshape it for you.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Josh Donald, the author of Sharp, The Definitive Guide to Knives, and we're taking your calls. So please call us if you have a question for him at 212-433-9692. And so we're talking about good techniques for sharpening knives. And you're differentiating between using a steel and using a stone. Can you just talk a little bit more about when you would, do you use them together or would you use them separately? When would you use a steel as opposed to when would you take out your grinding stone?
Well, barring having extremely hard hand-forged carbon steel Japanese knives, knives that are very particular to certain tasks, so say a sashimi knife, those have a super thin, very hard steel edge. You wouldn't want to bring that onto a sharpening steel. But other knives, including Japanese knives and Western knives certainly, a sharpening steel will help you keep the edge up by realigning it in a way. It's going to bend a little bit when you start to use it. So when you use a sharpening steel, gently run the knife down the steel. That'll bring the edge into true. It'll take off a little bit of metal and give you a new edge to a certain degree. What the steel can't do is reshape the edge. The geometry of the edge is really important to how it's going to move through the food when you're cutting. So if it's really thick and wedgy, it's not going to cut well because it's not going to move through food smoothly. That's where a tool like a stone that will remove some metal will be handy. And there's different grits of the stones, or different abrasive stones. So some are going to remove a lot more metal. Those that have a large particle. Some will polish the edge. Those have a very small abrasive particle. Those you would use to finish or to touch up an edge is just starting to dull.
We have a call from Noah in Brooklyn Heights who wants to talk about a serrated knife. Noah. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
So what is your question about the serrated knife?
I wanted to know what is the best way to sharpen a serrated knife, because that's always given me a lot of trouble.
Yeah, me too. I think a good trick is to take a dowel or even a pen that's the same diameter as the width of the as the shape of the serration, wrap a little sandpaper around it and pull that through the serrations.
That way you can
get into each serration. So you got to go one serration at a time with that. You'll start with something a little coarse, wrap up some finer paper over it, and it won't bring it back to the original quality of the edge when the knife was brand new, but it should get you pretty close. And a serrated knife is, in a way, a little less precise than a straight edge blade, say like a chef's knife. So just getting it aggressive again will make a big difference, even if it's not perfect.
Do you have a special tool for that in your business to do serrated knives? Or is that like a hack for a home cook or a home sharpener?
Yeah, that's kind of like a hack for a home cook. But, you know, I'll do that sometimes in my service. We'll use diamond files. If it's really chewed up, you know, they need to get reground. So each serration needs to get reground.
And
barring that, you can go to the back of the blade with a stone as well. Not ideal, but better than a dull knife.
Do you think that people in general should be sharpening their own knives, or should they just be honing them, just using the steel and then bringing them to a professional to actually have them ground and reshaped?
Well, I think it bears saying that a professional is only somebody that takes your money for sharpening.
Yep.
So the you know, if something is going to be too quick, too cheap. Don't bring all your knives. Bring one. See what they do. Because some sharpeners need to work really, really quickly, and that can be at the expense of quality work. But I like to get people working at home, you know, for handmade knives, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a super expensive knife. There's tons of really fabulous Japanese knives that are handmade that aren't terribly expensive, that sharpen very easily. The old-fashioned carbon steel knives, you know, the knife that Julia Childs would have told you to buy, those are easy to sharpen, and I really like getting people using whetstones. We do a series of classes through our store, and there's certainly lots of, you know, great info out there as well. There's lots of videos online, and we have a whole chapter on sharpening in the book as well that shows our technique for, you know, hand placement and kind of concepts to be looking at while you're sharpening. Even if you don't do it perfectly, I feel that there's lots of great low-hanging fruit. The difference between doing it imperfectly with a whetstone and doing nothing at all is pretty big. So I think it's worth people knowing how to do themselves.
So speaking of whetstones, Josh in Brooklyn has a question for you.
Hi, yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, yes. Josh.
Hey, so yeah, you guys were talking about using whetstones to sharpen knives at home. And I've been using a whetstone at home for about a year now. And I was just hoping that you guys could just quickly go over proper technique for sharpening knives at home with a whetstone.
Well, first you want to assess how dull the knife is. A good way to do that is to look at the edge, look at it, you know, dead on. See if you get light reflecting back to you. Next thing to do would be to feel the edge, run your fingers away from the cutting edge, see if you feel any roughness. Running your finger into the edge will tell you if it's dead dull or if there is some edge, but it can be a little deceptive as to what actually is happening at the edge. Knowing how dull the knife is important to what stone you're going to choose. If you look at the edge and you see light reflect back at you, that would be a very, very dull edge, and that would need something that was a lot more aggressive, so a coarse stone. You want to reshape the edge with a coarse stone and get a thin edge. The next thing would be to refine that. If you needed a coarse stone, then you want to remove those scratches of the medium stone. If the knife wasn't too terribly dull, start with the medium stone. That would be Japanese grit around 1,000. And then go to your finished stone. That will be anywhere between 3,000 and 8,000 Japanese grit. 6,000 is kind of my default finishing stone. I like that for a majority of knives. And then run it over a strop to deburr. The burr is that little flange of metal that's formed when you create two intersecting angles with the steel. And, yeah, that will be, you know, that way, using a coarse stone, you're able to get a nice thin edge. If you only go to a fine stone, over time, you probably will start making a thicker and thicker edge because you'll increase your angle as you go, because the work won't be as productive, if that makes sense.
Can you fix that? If you've done, say that you've been doing that this whole time, you've been using just a very fine grit, can you fix that with a coarser grit?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Nothing that you're going to do with a whetstone is permanent. There might be cosmetic things that could happen with scuffing the sides of the blade or whatnot, but you'd be really hard-pressed. It would take years of hard work to really ruin your knife.
Actually, that's I think, empowering for people to try it, because nothing you can do will completely ruin it, and it can be fixed. So anybody out there with a whetstone is a little bit of afraid, maybe give it a go. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, for sure. Once you start doing this and you realize that the steel is actually a somewhat malleable material, granted it's steel and it's hard, but it's not permanent. And so once you experience that, it changes your perspective on it. So once you've been able to reshape an edge, it really kind of opens it up.
And is there a particular kind of whetstone? So you have the different grits, but is there a company that you recommend?
There's a lot of good Japanese whetstones. And in the sharpening world, different people have their favorites. I would say that you don't need to buy the really expensive $200 stones in order to get good results. You will be hard-pressed to get good results out of the $15 stone, though. So
right.
Don't buy anything too little. You should get a stone that's a full-size stone, about 8 by 3 inches. And get a variety of stones. Have a coarse, medium, and fine stone. Don't use the coarse stone all the time, but have it for when you need it.
Talk about the difference between Japanese knives and Western knives. I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but I've always heard that you can't sharpen a Japanese knife unless you have a specific kind of ceramic stone.
The stones really go with Japanese knives by and large. You know, they really are designed to be sharpened with a fine finish. But many of them can be sharpened with a ceramic honing rod. Some people use diamond honing rods. I am a bit trepidatious about using them too much because they can remove a lot of metal. The stones do the best because they help you with the geometry, and the geometry is really important. But quick fix with a ceramic rod, barring that it's not a single bevel knife like a knife for sashimi, a yanagi, some of the traditional Japanese single bevel knives that are kind of chisel shaped. Those don't really belong on a sharpening rod type thing. But others, you can hit with a rod. The stones really give you the best results. And for softer steels, for the Western knives, and there's some softer Japanese knives. For softer Western knives, a little bit coarser finish. But the Japanese whetstones do great on those as well.
I've been speaking with Josh Donald, author of Sharp, The Definitive Guide to Knives, Knife Care, and Cutting Techniques, with recipes from great chefs. This is Midday on WNYC. We're going to be back taking your calls right after a break, so if you do want to call, jot this number down, 212-433-9692. We are speaking with Josh Donald, the author of Sharp, The Definitive Guide to Knives, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And we have Karen on the line who wants to ask a question about Japanese knives. Karen.
Hi, thank you so much. I received a gift of a set of knives, and one of the knives is a Japanese style. It doesn't have the curve of the chef's knife with which I'm more familiar. And I wonder if there are specific foods for which I should be using this more Japanese style knife, or just when I would be using that as opposed to the traditional chef's knife, the Western chef's knife.
So it's a square shaped blade.
It's not square shaped, but it doesn't. Well, it's more square. It doesn't have the upward curve of a chef's knife.
Oh right. So those knives will be used for vegetables and boneless proteins, so boneless meats, and they have a thinner blade than many Western chef's knives, but you would use a very similar technique, the rocking forward push cut, that will give you a little bit of slide in the edge as it's pinching the food between the board and the blade. That's what gives a chef's knife its cutting power, that also works with knives like a santoku, it sounds like what you have. It's real similar to a chef's knife. You're not going to use as much of a height with your hand as you start, so you're going to start the blade a little bit lower, and it's got a somewhat flatter edge, so it's not as sweeping of a stroke as you come out, but same general principle as a chef's knife.
Is that helpful? Karen, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fantastic. So now, Josh, do you have, between Western knives and Japanese knives, there are so many different kinds of each. Do you have a general preference for one style over the other, or does it really depend on what you're cooking?
Kind of depends on what you're cooking. And honestly, if it's sharp, it's going to, you could have a really amazing handmade Japanese knife that's just dull, 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 and it won't cut. And you could have a middling quality European mass-produced knife that has a fresh edge on it, and for that time being, it's going to do better than the really dull Japanese one. The benefit of the Japanese one will be that it will typically hold its edge a lot longer, and it will be easier to sharpen as well. But, I love Japanese chef's knife. That's kind of my go-to knife, at the risk of making a pun. It's called a gyuto. that was kind of dangerous territory there to step into, but that's my favorite. That's the biggest selling knife in our shop, that and a little utility knife. And what we discovered in researching the book was that those two knives, you know, what the knives that were most in demand in our shop have also been the ones that have had the best selling history in these old sales records that I got a chance to go through in France and Germany, looking at sales records in the 1880s, 1890s, you know, when the hotel chef really, the hotel restaurant really started to take off, and the knives that were being purchased to work in those a la carte menus, those are still the most popular knives today. The utility and the chef, or petty and gyuto, would be the Japanese versions of them.
So what? Tell it now. So how does a gyuto differ from a chef's knife?
It's by and large a gyuto is going to have a thinner blade, so it's going to have a slightly narrower range of uses. So a European chef's knife was made to be a real multi-purpose tool. It was going to be used between vegetables and meat, and it still, you know, still use has that set of uses between the Japanese and the Western. The Japanese blades typically are harder and have a little bit narrower range, so you don't want to butcher a chicken with your Japanese knife, whereas the Western chef's knife might not be ideal for that, but it won't complain about that too much.
So in your book, you wrote that when you followed our most popular Japanese knives to their root, that you landed in Europe. What did you mean by that?
Well, the gyuto and petty, those are the most popular knives in our shop. Those ones really trace their origin to the westernization of Japan, to the Meiji period, when Western cuisine was, you know, introduced, I guess you could say, others might say forced upon Japan with the forced modernization of Japan. So when meat was introduced to the Japanese diet, the knives for processing it weren't there. The Japanese had, you know, fish as their main animal protein, and meat was, you know, beef was certainly not. So the Western chef's knife that arrived with the Westerners became used for cutting the new ingredient, beef. And it was also discovered that it's a great tool and was brought into the Japanese knife pantheon, and especially in the newer Yoshoku Japanese foods, so the stuff that would be more Western influenced in terms of Japanese cuisine.
So if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Josh Donald, the author of Sharp, The Definitive Guide to Knives. And you can join the conversation. Just give us a call at 212-433-9692. So a question that I have is, for those cheap stainless steel paring knives that, you know, people buy, should we bother sharpening those? Or are those the kinds of things that once they get dull, you just can't sharpen them?
No, they can certainly be sharpened.
Okay, and so just the same exact technique that you were talking about, you'd put them on the whetstone, and then you'd steel them in between every once in a while?
Yeah, exactly. If they're really cheap and serrated, sometimes those can be a little difficult. Really, really cheap knives that are just a flat slab of metal with an edge ground into the side, those ones, and usually they're serrated, that's like the real kind of 99-cent kind of style knife. Oftentimes those, it's hard to get a good edge back on them again.
Okay. But even like, so you're saying that if it's super cheap, maybe not, but like a $10 knife, a $10 paring knife, you can actually, those can get new life.
Oh, yeah. Typically the end of those lives is when they accidentally end up in the garbage.
Okay.
Not when they end up unusable.
Right. We have
That's
a call.
Why you don't find very many old ones.
Right, because they disappear.
Yep.
We have a call from Victor in Farmingdale who wants to ask about an electric knife sharpener. Hi, Victor.
Hi, how are you? My main squeeze is an 8-inch German chef's knife, and I typically just hone it between every couple of uses. But what place does like a chef's choice electric sharpener have between a whetstone and a honing rod?
Well, honing rod is going to be your best bet for regular maintenance. Just make sure you don't use it at too steep of an angle and round off the edge. The electric sharpeners can be a blessing and a curse. I think the finer settings on them are a little bit of a better choice than the coarser settings. On a typical European knife that has the full bolster that goes all the way to the end of the heel, an electric sharpener will start removing metal a couple millimeters ahead of that bolster, so the heel of the knife won't be flat and won't contact your board after a little while of use of that electric sharpener if you use the coarse setting every time. So I prefer a stone, but for many that's not an option. If you're going to use an electric sharpener, go towards the finer setting first and see if you get the results. But go to the steel before any of those.
So the steel, how often should you use the steel? I mean, are we talking once every five times you use your knife, or are we talking more like, you know, once a month, maybe once every 20 times you use your knife?
It depends how you use your knives. So if you scrape a lot with the edge, if you push the blade down and chop, twisting the front part of the blade, that can bend the edge. If you scrape with the blade, that will bend it as well. Certain cutting boards will affect the edge more than others. Bamboo is particularly harsh. Really hard plastic boards and some hard composites can make the edge bend quicker as well. Cutting things that are not so easy to cut, you know, if you're cutting chicken bones or something like that, that can damage the edge as well. But the old adage was, you know, use the steel before you use your knives, and that was reflecting more of the really old style French carbon steel knives that would lose their edge kind of quickly, but then could be brought back with a steel very, very quickly. Modern alloys that hold their edge longer don't need that often of a steeling. Feel the edge. See if you feel a bent edge and feel away from the cutting direction of the edge. So run your fingers away from the edge on the flat of the blade and see if you feel a little roughness on one side, and then gently give it a couple of swipes on the steel.
And see if it smooths that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about food and how the relationship between cutting and flavor. You write about that in your book. So what do you mean by that relationship? How does cutting change flavor?
Well, depending on what kind of texture you incorporate into your cut. So with onions, if you are putting some thin sliced onions in your in a salad, if you cut against the grain, then those chew much, much easier than if you're cutting the onions along their grain, and they hold together more.
Like meat.
So certain things, how you manipulate the size and texture of the ingredients can really influence the flavor a lot. For certain things, you know, how it will oxidize. A really clean cut on a shallot gives you a different flavor than a unclean mashed up cut. So if you do a really fine brunoise with a very sharp knife and you just go through a shallot one time, you get a much different flavor than if you use a dull knife and then you kind of assault it on the cutting board, you chop it up and mash it up a lot. That gives you a little bit of a funkier, older red onion kind of flavor.
And what you were saying about the onion and the way you cutting either against the grain or along the grain, that was what a lot of, you know, that's very important when you're carving meat as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of ingredients have a structure that you're going to be working alongside. So getting a chance to understand how that interacts with your knife work is super important.
So earlier you mentioned something, I think you were calling it a pull cut and a push
Yes.
cut. Tell us about the different ways to handle the knife.
So a slice would be going from the heel of the knife, the part of the blade that's close to the handle, out to the tip. So if you're thin slicing meat and you don't want to disturb the slice that you're cutting, then you're going to do a pull cut. And it doesn't have the same kind of power as a push cut, where you start at the tip of the knife, drive the knife forward, slicing in a forward direction where you pinch the ingredient between the cutting board and the blade. That's how you would use a chef's knife. And So the blade operates like a miniature saw in a way. So sometimes the term razor sharp will get used, and razors and culinary knives operate in kind of very different ways. A razor or a chisel or plain iron, for that matter, pushes through what it's cutting. It doesn't slide back and forth at all in order to cut. So it needs a very, very, very fine edge in order to do that push cut. A culinary knife, however, is always being used with some sort of slicing motion, be it that forward slice of the chopping motion that you would use with a chef's knife, or the pulling stroke for the slice with a slicer or carving knife.
Mm-hmm.
So in both of those cuts, you're utilizing the tooth on the edge of the blade to interact with the food to cut it. Certain ingredients benefit from more tooth or less. Certain steels will do better over time with more or less tooth. That tooth is formed from the grit that you sharpen the edge with.
Okay.
A large grit gives you a large tooth because those large scratches make for basically, those deeper scratches make for a larger sawtooth pattern on the edge. A very fine grit will make a fine sawtooth pattern.
Okay.
Many vegetable, for Japanese knives with vegetable work, a fine edge is going to give you really nice results for cutting uncooked proteins you want more bite.
So, Josh, we have a call that we want to try to get in here. We have Dash on the line from Queens.
That's me.
Hi, Dash.
Hello? Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, hello. Okay, so my question is that what is the perfect knife to cut a steak with?
Cut a steak with. What do you think, Josh?
So once it's cooked?
One that's cooked, yes.
So to serve it, a slicer is great, but if you have a sharp chef's knife, that's going to work well as in addition. If it does have a bone in it, you want to be mindful of that.
And we have to leave it there, Josh. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining me today. I've been speaking with Josh Donald, the author of Sharp, the Definitive Guide to Knives, Knife Care, and Cutting Techniques, with recipes from great chefs.